Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome, guys, to this week's episode of Heavy Metal Tones with me, your podcast host, Tony Evans. This is a little bit of a special treat today, as we are I'm allowed to broadcast an interview I did with Bruce Sword from the Pineapple Thief recently, late last year, in around January, because they have a new album coming out. And Metal Ruse asked me to interview him. I've been a big fan of the Pineapple Thief for some time now, so it was really nice to catch up with him. You know, as usual, you've got the time delays of it being late night here, early morning over there. We had a good chat about prog, modern prog and classic prog and music in general, how we listen to it, how we get hold of it, how we basically how we record it, not record it, how we buy it. Maybe start thinking of the difference between classic prog and modern prog, right? And I've been thinking, I think that what the difference is that modern prog is a bit more sterile. And people are going to say, that's a negative thing. No, it's not actually. It just means that it's a bit more clinical because the technology they've got to use today to make it is a little bit more, it's a bit more digital, much more clean. And also the virtuosity of the people playing the music now seems to have grown exponentially, very much like it did in the first early era iterations of the genre from the sort of late 60s into the early 70s, where it was such a shock to go from the kind of sort of pop and rock scene, you know, the blues, 12 bar blues and the Beatles and stuff like that, to suddenly this sort of complex journey of textures of composition and instrumentation and lyricism. And I think that was a big change. It was a bit more. The musicians themselves were breaking ground. I think now the prog bands, if you want to put them in that category, and you know the Pineapple Thief are part of that category, and they'd happily admit to that, like Stephen Wilson and Porcupine Tree and so on. They are much more involved in the creation of the music, as in the production, the recording, the studios, the editing, everything, much more so than maybe the early prog bands were, because they were just more interested in creating this unusual music, and they weren't really that fussed about. Or maybe Pink Floyd were, but much more about the actual music than the production of the music, which was handed off to other people. more so now, these bands do it themselves. And so they're using these high power computers and all this technology. And it sort of sometimes, as I said, I think it sterilizes the sound to an extent that can make people who are new to the genre a little bit put off by it, right? So I think what you have to do, if you listen to this podcast for the first time and haven't really listened to any major prog, go back and listen to episodes I've done about it, one of the early episodes. Also, just go and listen to some classic prog first, you know, some Genesis, some Yes, some Emerson, Lake and Palmer, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then go listen to the more modern stuff, and you'll hear the difference. The modern stuff is again, it's a fight against the blandness and the ineptitude of some of these modern pop tracks and songs. It is, again, what the prog was about. It was about integrating classical music a lot of the time into popular rock and roll. Not so much the classical music in this side, but much more technicality into the side of the rock and roll. So this is what I think bands like, you know, Porcupine Tree, The Pineapple Thief, Marillion, they do will do very, very well. So anyway, that's my little thought of it. I think you might think it's more sterile, but actually it's just very, very well made and very, very and very, very technical, and sometimes that puts people off. But I think you can find the passion in the technicality. It doesn't lose all its passion that sometimes some of these really sort of virtuosic pieces of music can do. It's just about, look how clever I am and not how much emotion I can put through into the music. Not so much with The Pineapple Thief. I think you'll find it's a very big mixture of classic prog and modern prog. And Bruce is a really, really nice dude. We could go to chat to, and I think you're going to really enjoy the interview I did with him. And so without further ado, here is Bruce Sword of The Pineapple Thief.
Okay.
Hey, so it's nice to see you, Bruce. How are you going?
All right. Yeah, it's like 10 o'clock in the morning here. I don't know what time it is there. It's
9 o'clock in the evening.
Oh, nice. That's a nicer time of day. Just got back from the school run, so yeah. But I'm all right.
Yeah. It's bloody warm here, is it? What's it like over there? Is it cold still?
Cold, yeah. 5 degrees. Typical English weather, sort of grey, a bit damp.
Yeah, that's why I run away from it. That's why I'm here at 30-odd degrees on a sunny day.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So we're here to talk about, obviously, The Pineapple Thief, which is your baby. I've followed them for a very long time. As you can probably tell, I'm a Marillion fan. So,
oh, yeah.
So, you know, prog is in my blood.
Yeah.
And I've sort of found your stuff really, really intriguing and very modern, which I think is what, of course, you're aiming for, I'm sure. The new singles that just came out, I was just listening to them over the last couple of days, which was Frost, which I really, really enjoyed.
Mm.
That's come off the new album that's coming out soon, I believe.
Yeah, February the 9th. So, yeah, the Frost. I think we've released the Frost on a track called Every Trace of Us. Mm. And we got another single coming on this Thursday, February the 1st, which is it leads to this title track.
Oh, brilliant.
And then the album drops on February the 9th. I'm kind of conscious that a lot of bands give away a lot of music before the album comes out. You know, some bands, more than half the record is kind of released and then the album comes out. It's kind of a modern thing. It didn't used to be that way, like in the 80s and 70s. No,
I'm with you on that completely, because I just had that same issue. I had did a whole program about it. Like, I just bought the new Peter Gabriel album. Unbelievable, the new album. It's a brilliant album. But I had to stay away from all of the press releases because he released every single song off the album.
Yeah. Gavin, our drummer, he's a massive Peter Gabriel fan. And he said by the time the album came out, he was like, oh, I was so fed up.
Yeah.
You know, because it was practically a year.
Yeah, it was. Almost. Every full moon, apparently. Yeah.
Oh, was so, it?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I stayed away.
Yeah, that was definitely an extreme example, but yeah, I think I like the idea of maybe having one single, two singles. I had to tell the label that actually, because they wanted to put four singles out. And I said, no, that's half the album. Let's at least keep it to three. So,
I think you're right, you know. I think, and that really is the, because I mean, this, I mean, you're a prog band through and through.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't really call, I mean, I don't think of prog bands as single bands. you know, no. as releasing singles. You just don't think of them that way. But when they, like you said, oh, your label wants four singles, I was like, oh, okay, I get it, because they want more money, they want more exposure, they want more downloads.
Every time a single comes out, they think they can push it, and you know, and it's all social media now, you know, paying for social media ads and boosts, all this kind of thing. So, yeah, it's not like the old days with MTV or, you know,
no, or the radio, or the radio, or top 10 or top whatever. I had this discussion. Yeah, you sound like we're old men, but I had this discussion about this the other day. With I was like, remember when music meant something?
Yes, I know.
When it was a social commentary or something, it wasn't just throw away all the time. Like,
yeah.
It was produced by people. Yeah.
I think it's like anything is now, is that you in the old days, you had to earn your right to have the platform to put the music out there. Now, you know, it's a bit like social media commentary. Anyone's got a platform, you know, it's so easy to make music the number of songs are uploaded to Spotify every day. It's just,
crazy. Because you started in 1999. So right at the end of the 90s into the millennium. And that was sort of just on the wave of the internet, wasn't it? Sort of 97, 98, that internet explosion.
Really, right. I remember when the first album came out, there was a new website called mp3.com.
Yeah.
And you could upload MP3s. And so I uploaded a couple of songs, and it was really only the nerds and the geeks that went on there. But that actually did get me some listeners. I remember people were emailing from Canada, all over the world, going, oh, I love this music. And so it really was the very, very beginning. But back then, it still was physical product, was still absolutely king, you know, the CD.
And now it's gone back to vinyl, thank goodness. Yeah. But so obviously the long career that you've had, and it's what, 16 studio albums?
Yeah, I think so. I've lost track now.
I think it's 16.
16 if you include the Give It Back one. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, that's no mean feat for a musician like yourself. And let's be honest, prog now is not a dirty word. I mean, let's be honest, in 1999, it was probably a bit of a dirty word. It was a four-letter word. It didn't mention the word prog.
Really, really hard. There was no exposure. We were on a really small little label called Cyclops.
Mm.
I mean, we were lucky to have that, but... Yeah, there was no press. There was a few underground fanzines, a few sort of webzines, early webzines that came on board that kind of promoted it. But yeah, it was really, really difficult. And we were there was in the 90s. There was the big scene. I mean, you had Marillion, but you had a lot of other sort of neo prog bands.
Yes, Pendragon,
Arena, and that kind of stuff. And we didn't sound like that. We were kind of doing more sort of, I guess this is what, because Marillion are a strange band, because they were probably the kings of neo-prog in the 80s, but then they evolved into this completely different beast.
Sound. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And sort of much more melodic song-based stuff. And that's generally what we wanted to be, or I wanted to be as a songwriter, was to have everything that I loved about 70s progressive rock, but bring what I loved about modern music, and especially hooks and sort of, you know, lyrics that people can connect with.
Yeah, so more accessible than the really sort of abstract 27 minutes, you know, Genesis pieces. Yeah,
exactly. You know, Yes and Genesis. I always think of my wife, who's not much, she's certainly not a progressive. She loves the Pineapple Thief, but she doesn't like sort of progressive rock. So I kind of think, well, she would never, if I played her Close to the Edge, she would just go, what the hell is this? Turn it off.
I'll be going, please, more.
Yeah, exactly. But it's that kind of thing. But if I played her, say, Crime of the Century by Supertramp, she would get it.
Yeah. Yeah,
but they're both prog rock bands from the early 70s, well, prog albums from the early 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just goes to show how wide a genre.
And that's what I love about bands like yourself, because they are in such a wide scope. It's not just like, you know, there's this image and it's all capes and dragons and 20-minute keyboard solos. Yes. It isn't the case, right?
No.
It's just like people like you who have extremely good, extreme musical talent. You know, breathing more life into it, modern sound into it, which I think is a fantastic thing. It's what I love about your work.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
It's,
yeah. Yeah.
Carry on, sorry. You carry on, carry on.
No. I was just thinking about, you know, the how it did change. I remember in the early days, there was sort of myself, there was Stephen Wilson, who was in very similar position on a very small label called Delirium, doing sort of psychedelic stuff. And I remember sort of we were sort of both in this sort of same sort of zone, trying to get this more melodic, modern sounding rock out there, but it was so difficult. And then obviously Stephen Wilson and Porcupine Tree just went on to get the success that they did, which is, you know, really, you know, they paid their dues. They definitely deserve it. And then that paved the way. I think that if you look at how the progressive rock scene has grown through, you know, through the 2000s and the last sort of 20 years, it's incredible. I've kind of lived through the whole thing.
You have. You're one of the OGs. I hate that term, but you're probably one of the OGs. Yeah. The young people might say. But I was looking about this the other day. You know, like if you listen to prog from the 70s, so like that, I always think prog is a very small window, right, of time. And you have Yes and Genesis and ELP, which is my favorite, and all that stuff. And they all hark back to what they were listening to, which mainly they were listening to a lot of classical music, a lot of folk music. I think that your sort of music, when I listen to yours and Wilson's as well, to some extent, there's a lot of 80s pop coming through in there, like XTC. And, you know, I hear all sorts of, even Eurythmics, weirdly, all sorts of things in your influence.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I even, because they were all just top quality pop songs, weren't they, you know, which had depth to them. And I mean, Gavin's a massive Peter Gabriel fan. And I think he was doing a huge amount of session work in the 80s, you know, 1142 and Paul Young and stuff, touring all over. So he brings that sensibility to the band as well. And in the new record, he's got this Nord drum, which is basically an electronic sort of drum pad thing.
Yeah.
Proper 80s.
Wonderful.
Stuff. So when he starts hitting it, I'm like, whoa, Gav, what's that? It says, yeah, but it's brilliant, because, you know, we're living in this sort of postmodern world where you can throw everything in the pot now. You know, the influences from everything is good.
Do you think that frees you as a musician, or it traps you a bit?
No, I think the fact that anything goes is really, you know, liberating. You know, that's a thing. We don't, there's almost, I mean, the thing is that I kind of, after 25 years, I've honed my skills as a rock sort of songwriter. So I'm not just going to turn up and say, yeah, I'm going to start writing R&B, because I wouldn't be able to do it. You know, I've spent 25 years learning this craft, and that's, but at the same time, you don't want to do, every artist would say they don't want to just churn out the same record, you know, every couple of years, so there's that feeling of wanting to sort of keep, and that's what keeps the excitement and the, you know, the lust for songwriting alive, you know, the fact that you can just mix things up. And when we did this, we sat down to start the new record, we were like, you know, let's think of, and as soon as we found ourselves going reverting back to type, which I could often do when songwriting, the rest of the guys would say, no, we've done that, it sounds good, Bruce, but we've done it before, put it in the bin, you know. So it makes it quite nice.
Yeah, and that'd be difficult with 16 albums to remember you've done that before. I mean, there's a lot of music, there's a lot of minutes that you've recorded. You know, and then you go, oh God, that does sound like something off the first album. Like, you know, like...
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky that the keyboard player who's probably the first person I send my new ideas to, you know, I've known him since 1996. He came and helped with my previous band to the Panoply. It was this band called Vulgar Unicorn, proper prog. Band. And that was in 1996. We had on the same record label, Cyclops, we put out these sort of real, so I've known him for, that's a long time. And a bass player, I've known him since, I met him in 1991. We had a sort of funk sort of pop, like Chili Peppers sort of band.
Yeah,
we were jumping around in socks and shorts, you know. He was slapping his bass, it was like so I've known him ever since. And so it's a really good sort of band. There's a good relationship that we all have that help.
Yeah,
you know, keeping it fresh.
So on the new album, is there any new directions? Speaking of that, is there anything new apart from the Nord drum? Is there anything like you that you're really proud of in a directional way? Or
thing, what I realize is, well, just this particular guitar that I used for most of the record is a six-string baritone guitar.
Yeah.
So it goes down really low, and it just made me sing in a different way, but it also gave the album a really different kind of vibe, a lower, more sort of sinister sort of edge.
Right.
And what I really like about it is that you get a lot of modern bands, especially progressive metal bands, who have got like 7-8 string going down to that register, but it's all really saturated metal.
Yeah.
And what I loved about this guitar was that it was a like proper old school 70s, like a Black Sabbath sort of,
crunchy,
deep. Crunchy, which is just as, if not more powerful, I think, than these big, super saturated modern progressive metal acts. And so it just gave the album this unique sort of vibe for me. So that was a big thing. Like, and you know, so, let's say Gavin's Nord drum. And we also got a live, the guitarist who plays live with us, a guy called Baron Matthews. He played a load of guitar on the record, and that gave it a new fresh, you know, I just one thing I've got good at in my old age is being able to let go and open up and just let people come in and do their thing. Whereas in the early days, I'd just be Mr. Control Freak.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're surrounded by people you trust, you know, and good, and you got people like Gavin Harrison in the band. Yeah, I don't need to be telling him how to play the drums. That's quite easy.
So, like, I just had a thought then. You know, like, when you go on tour, being the band you are, with the history you have and the size of audience that you would bring along, and say, when promoters are promoting you in say, festivals, because you're a prog band, do they honestly think, oh, straight away you're up with the prog metal bands like Opeth and... Do they bung you in there? Is that
what happens? Really difficult. We are in this kind of no man's land zone, because like we're not like we wouldn't do a kind of a mainstream sort of rock pop festival, although we could do. But then there's an awful lot of metal festivals. I mean, we've just been offered a slot in a big festival, but Dream Theater, Opeth, Catatonia, and then us.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, that'd be quite, but we kind of think, well, maybe the audience would be ready for, you know, a bit more sort of traditional classic rock sounding, you know.
They might be after that amount. Yeah.
And a lot of modern Opeth, you know, that's almost like Canterbury scene sounding anyway. So,
do you know what it is? You're so right. Honestly, that is most of the best. That's the best I've heard of someone say about the new Opeth. Yeah, it's very Canterbury sounding.
Yeah.
Oh dear, because in Australia we have a lot of prog bands, but they're all prog metal bands most of the time. Right?
A lot, I know. Yeah,
a lot of them, and I know quite a few of them. They're nice guys, but my God, it's all violins and extreme vocals and you know, very extreme wacky times. Yeah, you know, as you said, like 9-string. You're like watching. Like,
yeah, exactly. And I mean, because I know the guys in Haken, because they toured Australia quite a lot.
Yes.
And similar kind of thing. They've got these massive, the curvy necked big guitars. And it's amazing. Because I did their Atmos mix for the last record, and it is incredible to listen to, but very, very different to what the Pineapple Thief is doing.
Yeah. Sure. I think there's a weirdness about it, because your prog is more... easy to absorb, right?
Yeah,
when you've got
and connect with us,
connect with, thank yeah. you, yes. Very much like Wilson. I mean, Wilson, I love him, but he can be a bit down sometimes, but that's his lyric, right? That's what he's like. But that some of this modern metal stuff is just, I mean, I do love it, but my God, it's mind bending.
Yeah,
I'd just be able to hear, I'd like to hear the lyric, thank you. Could I just be able to hear the lyric?
Yeah. And I think that's what we get when we play live. You can see it's really interesting to see the demographic, the kind of people that come to our shows. I mean, in the early days, it was proper prog audience. A bit like, have you been to a Marillion convention?
Yes, I have.
Yes.
Yes,
so we played Marillion, I think it's 2005. They played a holiday camp in the UK, and we opened for them.
Butlins, where it was. Yeah.
Yeah, Butlins. Yeah, Minehead. And you could see in those old days, you know, there was a certain sort of prog fan that was kind of a music lover in the 70s. It was still loving music in the 90s. You know, they were still there. Yeah. Which, and I love them, and we wouldn't be here without them. But when we tour now and you see the new generation of people coming through, you know, young couples that are hugging and singing along, then that's really special as well, because that's, you know, that your music, that there's another generation of people.
Yes,
that's growing forward.
I went and saw Marillion, God, it would be fucking to Australia. So 1990, so season's end tour.
Yeah.
And I'm at the side of Wembley Arena, right, with my then girlfriend. And I look over. First, there's a big sea of long-haired, you know, middle-aged men. And I look over, and then there's this young kid. He would have been about 12. And I got such a buzz off that, because I thought, you know what? Good on you, man, because this is good music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was like I can know that feeling.
Yeah. It was like heartwarming.
Mm.
So you obviously you've played Australia, haven't you?
No,
as a band? You've never played it.
No, never made it. No, it's we've tried. We were almost going to come, and I think the pandemic put pay for that.
Yeah.
It's just difficult. It's especially difficult for us because of drums situation. So Gavin has to have that. He can't just turn up and play any old kit. He's got to have his drum kit.
Yeah,
and they just such a pain in the ass to move and to ship.
Yeah,
and because Australia's quite a big place, isn't it? It's not like in England where you can just 2 hours on the road and we're in the next venue.
Exactly, it's like 6 hours to the next venue.
So, but no, never say never. I mean, it's definitely doable. We can get the drum kits. If we can get the drum kit, then we've been talking about doing the Australia, maybe tacking Japan on, and then
They'd love you in Japan, man. I reckon they'd love you.
Yeah, man. I'd love to do it.
So have you got a tour coming planned for this album?
So yeah, we're just about to head off for a European tour.
Right.
Which when we haven't played for such a long time, you don't take it for granted that people still going to come out and watch you. And plus, post-pandemic, it's very busy. There's lots and lots of bands touring.
Oh, God, it's crazy.
But luckily, it's lots. But luckily it's... ticket sales are already more than the last European tour, and we haven't left yet. So it's like, thank God for that, because it's the band that would lose money. It's a big risk when you put a tour together for a band.
I mean, of course it is. There's dollars, pounds and cents and everything behind it, isn't it? It's money, man.
Yeah. And tour bus, you don't want to know how much it costs to run a tour bus
every day. I'd hate to think.
But we're lucky. So we're lucky it's worked. So now we realise that people, they're still out there. They still want to see us. So we're doing this sort of 4.5 week tour of Europe, and then hopefully go back to North America at the end of the year. And then beginning of next year, we're going to look at, and you know, Europe again, where we haven't gone to. And like saying, you never know. Australia, I just, every time a new album comes out, the number of people will say, oh, come to Australia.
Yeah. You've got a big fan base here.
We'd love to do it. Yeah.
So, when I think of Europe and prog bands, right, like Fish particularly is really big in Poland and Germany. Do you have like a heartland where the countries are that you're more popular in?
Yeah, it's weird. And it's something that we sort of built on. For instance, Paris is really, really good for us. And Paris is notorious, you know, France and Paris is notorious for English bands to sort of break. And so somehow we've done well there. Amsterdam, biggest seller of the lot. Germany is really good, but Cologne is by far the best.
Yeah.
You know, strange things. You know, just look at, but Poland is just coming right up. We played Italy for the first time in 2018, and we thought, oh my goodness, is anyone going to come? And they sold out. Now has just become, in fact, and Spain as well. We went to Spain for the first time, and that was just, Spanish audience is like a football match. It's such a crazy atmosphere. They're chanting, singing, and so it's kind of realized that we can go almost anywhere. It's really lucky. I think that's the big thing about being a progressive rock act, is that it's global. You can go anywhere. You go, and Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, all of North America, you know, and you name it, it's just everywhere. Whereas when I was growing up and you looked at like these big Britpop bands, for example, that it's huge in England, would do nothing in the USA, struggle in Europe and everything. So, even though I can walk down the street in my hometown without being mobbed, I think, you know, it's the fact that that we can play, get an audience in any town, just makes it really, really vital. That's why that's how we, you know, we've become sort of full-time musicians.
Yeah, I think that's because quality music, and I mean this because I'm a big prog fan and I love your work, and so this sort of music is in my soul. But you know, music that's not just, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like punk, I like heavy metal, I like all music, you know, I listen to everything, right?
Yeah.
But there's something very fulfilling about your kind of music. You know, you put on your album on the way to work on the bus, as I did this morning, your first album, and it just, you get taken away. Suddenly I've got to get off the bus. I'm not just oh, you know, oh, I've got to kill time here. This is like, oh, I've got to get up, shit. You know, you just get taken away, whether it's lyrically or musically. And I think that's why it's universal prog, because it's not, it doesn't matter if you can't understand what they're saying. Because like the Italians have a huge prog audience. I found out only recently. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great place to go for us.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, I really hope the new album does well. I hope
thank you very much.
Blows everything out of the water, as like everything always does with you guys. It's always going to be an interesting journey.
Thanks.
Going through your work, and I do hope you get to come to this very hot and sticky part of the world, because it is hot.
Yeah, so do I. So do I. Get away from this grey, dull.
Oh, I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
I went back to visit my dad last year, and I was like, oh, now I'm going back.
Yeah.
I need the sun.
Yeah.
Recharges the batteries. Although saying that, I think, sorry, before you go, I think the British Isles are really good for that in a musical way, because it is such a, if you know that classic song, you know, about four seasons in one day, right? You do. You do get that over there.
You do. Yeah. You do get the extremes. Yeah.
And I think you know, makes your sort of music a little bit more interesting than just be sunshine and cars on the beach, you know what I mean?
True. Yes. You're right. Yeah, then I might run out of inspiration.
Yeah. Oh, I can't record. I'm not miserable.
I'm only joking.
Yeah. No, but thanks for chatting, my friend. I hope you
that's right. No, enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I loved it, and I love your work, and I really look forward to hearing the album. When's it out again?
9th of Feb.
Brilliant. Yeah. And also, you said the new single drops
Thursday, 1st of Feb. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, I'll be on to that one. Over here, probably right, 2 in the morning or something.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Safe travels.
All right. Yeah.
Andrew, thanks for coming.
Cheers.
Bye, mate.
Yeah. No worries. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the episode with me and the interview with Bruce Sword. I'm sorry about that abrupt ending, but that's what you do sometimes when you have quickly end interviews, when they've got other interviews to do after you. If you want to see the video and watch my lovely silver fox face and Bruce's lovely features, please do click on the link in the show notes below, and you better go to the Metal Ruse website, the home of all things heavy metal and heavy rock in Australia and around the world, and you'll be able to watch the video there. Anyway, that's enough for me now. I'm sure you've heard enough of my voice wobbling on. We will talk to you next week. Please do like and subscribe on all of the platforms on which I am thoroughly being listening to, and give us a review. It helps us all it helps the algorithm for other people to find me. Anyway, bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.